How can I know God is real?
What does the Bible say about politics?
Why does a good God allow suffering?
If you have questions about faith, life or culture, don't be afraid to ask. This is Ask with David Dean.
G'day everyone, Dave Dean here. And our question for the week is, what is the biblical teaching on slavery? This is an understandable question given that both the Old and the New Testaments talk about slavery and nowhere is it outright condemned. But there are a number of things to keep in mind here. For one, we're talking about different worlds. God's laws for Israel were not intended to establish an ideal society overnight, but were instead an incremental improvement on the ethics and laws of the surrounding nations 3,500 years ago. That's completely different to us today in a very different part of the world. But the important thing for our understanding here is that that historical context of the ancient Near East is the comparative place to assess these laws. By comparing Israelite laws with those of the surrounding nations, such as the Code of Hammurabi or the laws of the Hittites and the Egyptians, we see that many of Israel's laws were more humane and protective of the vulnerable, including women, slaves, and foreigners. God's regulation is, again, not an ideal situation, like slavery is analogous to the Australian government's regulation of, say, prostitution or gambling. Regulating something in a broken place or system or civilization is not necessarily the same as promoting it or condoning it. A second consideration is that we're talking about different words as well. Today we have one word for slave in English, and every terrible idea, particularly from modern history, the last several centuries, gets thrown into that. But in the Hebrew, there are a number of different words with different meanings, the majority of which tend to revolve around this idea of indentured service. Now, when you think about it, back then in the times of the Old Testament, there were not civil structures and support systems in place for people. So things like slavery were a way of establishing economies and people's protections and debt collecting and so on and so forth. So again, the worlds and the words here are overlapping. But in general, you could have very successful, quote-unquote, slaves who were even perhaps more educated and had a higher position than their owners. It's just that their position was to serve another purpose. But usually it was simply for the purpose of either paying off a debt or simply making an income for that particular slave and their family. So that leads to a third consideration, different worlds, different words, different work. Think about what your grandfather did for work, your grandmother, your great-grandparents. Now, think about how different that is from you today. What about those grandparents of our friends and family around the other side of the world, say in a place like Africa? How different that would look to even our grandparents. Now zoom out again and go back 3,500 years ago to the other side of the world in the ancient Near East, and how much different would work have been then? Again, these are some circumstantial differences that help us catapult ourselves from where we are in the modern world back to where they were. And as strange as things like indentured service can sound to us, it helps us to realize that we are talking about such a radically different time and place. But oftentimes, again, this is referring to something like more of an indentured service or contractual agreement. And there were clauses for, quote unquote, slaves to get out of their particular situations with the laws of Jubilee and so on. The fourth and final consideration we can have here, different worlds, different words, different work, is different witness. A big part of the Mosaic Law was to set Israel apart from the nations. God met Israel where they were at. He didn't come with a 21st century secular standard of morality and impose it upon them any more than he came with something like electricity and expected them to, you know, make way in the wilderness with that. He meets people where they are at in their cultural context. And again, the ancient world was one where slavery was ubiquitous. But he provides laws that would set Israel apart from the other nations. And more than just compassion here, we're talking about justice and mercy and kindness as well to those in positions of slavery that was ultimately pushing and pointing towards something higher than where the world was at. These specific laws demonstrated Israel's relative progressiveness, such as the prohibition of child sacrifice, which was practiced by some neighboring cultures, as well as laws against exploitation and oppression and the provision for the release of debts and slaves with, again, the laws of Jubilee. So in all, Israel's obedience bore witness to the God they served, and ultimately this was pushing forward to the revelation of Yahweh in Jesus, who we're told in Philippians 2:6 is a kind of slave for us in that he lowered himself and emptied his rights to become a servant for us. So any intuition against slavery, I think, in the final analysis must reckon with who Jesus is, the one God Almighty who became a slave for us.
Do you have a question about Christian beliefs, theology, doctrine, philosophy, or culture? Don't be afraid to ask. Go to drcdean.com/ask. That's Dean with an E.